And I'm setting it up for Carl and Jackie up this Friday night, the 16th of April, 1971. Friday night, the 16th of April, 1971. Channel 1 right, a new reel. And I'm setting it up for Carl and Jackie up this Friday night, the 16th of April, 1971.
But the terrible thing, now, you didn't know this old man, Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
I don't reckon you did, did you?
Oh, no.
Why'd you turn it off?
That's why I want to play it. Why would you turn it off? I didn't know it would go on forever.
Yeah, old Uncle Gus, boy, he was...
Oh.
He was deaf in one ear. So.
That's so clear.
Yeah.
And he said it's... I mean, all... do if he wasn't interested in, he just let you talk into his deaf ears and he explained things, and he never did turn you down, he just never did hear what you said. And of course old Wilson Boozer, see, his widow lives out in our neighborhood, and he was the same thing. I don't know if I ever told you this story. Now I went down to the Citizens
Bank. I can't hear one of
I went down to Citizens Bank one day to get a loan, see, and I was dealing with Boozer. And told him how much money I needed. And so he...
Oh, you had dealings with Boozer?
Yeah.
He's our neighbor.
And so...
Is he still your neighbor?
No, he's dead.
Yes, yeah. I thought he was. Yes.
And
wife.
So he was counting on his fingers like this. He figured it out. So he figured up like that, see? And so the same day, I went out to lunch with Bill Pennington, who worked for me, and Justice Williams, who was... president of the Florida National Bank. And we were eating, we got talking about something, and we got to arguing about some figures, and Just said, well, here, I'll figure it out. I said, anybody got a pencil? Of course, I always had a pencil. So he used my pencil to do all this figuring, showing us where we were wrong. So. And I said, darn, this is a funny day. This morning I dealt with a banker who counted on his fingers, and now I have lunch with one who doesn't even carry a pencil. And old Just looked at me and said, Carl, I learned a long time ago to figure with the other guy's pencil. But Wilson Boozer is perfect. He, I suspect that whichever gate he arrived at when he died, he was laughing because he was playing golf with Dick Schmidt, as a matter of fact,
mm-hmm.
and a couple other guys. And they were joking, laughing, and Wilson leaned over to pick up his ball and collapsed and died right there. No hospital bill, no nothing.
He would have liked it that way.
No, we will. We'll call him. Are you going to be there?
What were you saying?
Okay, good enough.
Mr. Boozer.
What were you saying?
Oh, I was saying...
I missed what you said.
Well, it wasn't important. Yeah, Miss Boozer just called me the other day and asked me to a party, and it was such a coincidence.
Yeah.
Because I never see her, you know. She's quite elderly.
Yeah.
And her daughter is Betty Price, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
They were having a party for a new neighbor.
Well, now, Boozer was in the business for a long time here.
Yeah. See, he was with the Pfeiffer State Bank, and that used to be with Chase and Kitchens. But it's now the parking lot next to Chase and Kitchens.
Yeah.
And then they closed that out, and it was dormant for a while, and then they started the Citizens Bank. And Boozer was president of the Citizens Bank. And J.B. Carmichael was... vice president.
Yeah.
And
Boozer himself goes, he was in business then for a long time here.
Yeah. A long, long time.
Long time. Well, now,
I think Mr. Patterson was talking about Uncle Gus Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
No, he mentioned Boozer,
but then he mentioned, well, maybe it was Boozer he was dealing with at the Pfeiffer State Bank at the time.
Because remember when he was building that house, Carl,
yeah.
He got the doors from up.
What's that?
We had taken off two doors in our kitchen. Our whole kitchen was just nothing but doors, and we didn't need but one. That we don't have even one anymore. But we'd put the doors up in the attic, and we were talking to him one day, Miss Pat, and he was talking about he had his house finished, except he had to get two doors. And he was mumbling about the door. I said, "Well, I've got two doors, but they might not fit in your house." And he says, "Oh, I'll make them
fit." I'll whittle them down close
to the door. So we gave him those doors. And they, one of them was the glass, you know, with little glass things all the way down to the, it had gone out to the porch. If we ever sold our house, probably people might want to put the doors back.
Well, Phil, how far back can you remember him up there, Carl?
Well, let's see. He came to work for us right after the war.
After the war?
Yeah, about 1946, I think it was.
Yeah.
And that was when Jackie and I were living on campus, and Jim was a little boy. We lived right in the center, see. So Jimmy'd disappear, and he had 37 different archway sections to disappear into. And Jake'd go out there looking for him. She'd have a switch, see. Miss Pat'd come on. Ms. Off, now you don't need that switch. I'll find a little stroker. You don't need to switch him.
He never would let him spank. That's why. It's what's the matter with Jimmy to this day. Because he wasn't spanked all those times.
And then Jimmy was in high school, where I had this contest giving away a moped at the college inn, and it was sponsored by Philip Morris Company. So you'd turn in empty Marlboro or Philip Morris or whatever other cigarette they had, Alpine, packages, see.
Yeah.
So Jimmy wanted to get into it, so I got with Mr. Patterson, and he had all the janitors and maids. When they now they'd we'd get these great big sacks of
it was really cheating, you know.
Empty sacks, and we'd sit there all evening long putting James W. Opp on these things, and Jimmy'd go over and stuff. Of course, they had huge boxes of these. Everybody
yeah, all
was in on
the
thing.
The twins, the boys,
so. Well, I figured he had a reasonable chance of winning.
I would have it.
I don't know how. We must have put 2,000 in those damn things. Of course, the other people were just putting their own in.
Wasn't that awful? Mr. Patterson enjoying it all.
Some of the students were a little teed off. It was unfair.
That was putting it mildly. I didn't know they knew about it.
Well, no, they didn't know about it really, but they thought it was unfair. They thought it was for students only, see.
Jimmy
wasn't a student, but they never did find out how we really stuffed the ballot box on that.
That was really dishonest, Carl.
Well, it wasn't dishonest.
I didn't really think that they would get so many.
I never could understand how a man who talks like this, Phil does there, you know, that a little old $1,000. You're going to tell him how to spend it. How he could hire out to anybody.
Well, it was because he was over hundreds of people, hundreds of Negroes.
No, he had this whole work crew.
He was boss down there. He had this big work crew, and he ran them. He was, he hired out, but he was the boss of all those people. They came to him and asked him for favors and this, that, and the other.
Oh, he was the boss.
He was the boss.
No, he was in charge of, he was the labor supervisor. Now, Mr. Hurlong handled the maintenance and that end of it, see.
Yeah.
But Mr. Patterson was the, he supervised the cleaning crews. And nobody argued with him. And he wouldn't argue with anybody. I mean, that was the way Well, he wouldn't argue with me. I'd tell him what needed to be done and what problems we had, and he'd say, all right, I'll take care of them. And I remember one problem we had. One of the maids came to Mr. Patterson, and some of these boys in the section, she was, you know, not too unattractive, even though she was black. And we had a pretty heavy load of students then, so there were four to a suite. And these were older boys, they were veterans. And
no girls on campus.
No girls on campus. And so they'd been kind of trying to get close to this gal, and she went to Mr. Patterson and told him. And so I found out about second hand and asked him about it. He said, don't worry about my stuff, I've taken care of it. So they won't go bother her anymore. So I just went up there with my broomstick and I told him a few little things. He said, they won't bother anymore. You don't need to make an issue of it.
With his broomstick.
Yeah, he always carried a broomstick around. You know, you got it somewhere in a while. Punch around in the toilet, see if it's been cleaned properly. Never can tell when you come across a snake.
Well, that's not funny. We did lose some snakes in those storms.
Yeah, that was one that happened this, no, I don't want
any more. No more. Yeah, what about you?
Yes, Faye, half a cup.
Okay.
I love
that. Yeah, we'll forget about that. The, boy came rushing down there and right at the noon hour, and he had been out in Payne's Prairie and he got these snakes and he had them in a sack and put them in his room. He's going to take biology class.
Yeah.
And came down and said one of his snakes was missing. He'd asked the maid about it. She never even turned in the keys.
She never
even collected her pay. Mr. Patterson went up and he searched that section from top to bottom. We never did find that damn missing snake. And how it could have gotten out, I don't know, because there weren't any pipe shattered or anything.
Uh-huh.
And one was still in the sack. He had them in a gunny sack, but the other one was gone. And the first thing he did was ask the maid if she'd seen a snake. She took off. We never even got the college keys back from her.
Well, now, something like that was always happening to him, I guess.
Oh, there was never a dull moment in those dorms. Something awful.
Speaking
like the bed bugs.
Remember the
guy came in and said they had bed bugs, and it turned out the birds nested in the ivy around the windows, and it was mites from them.
Baby birds had left the nest, see, and the mites had just got in there, and they were hunting something warm. And But every once in a while, we'd have a problem about contraband, or reports of thefts and missing articles and things. Mr. Patterson didn't shake down a room. We weren't supposed to know to go in there and go into personal possession, but I'd tell him what the problem was. Well, I'll take care of it. And he could shake down a room, and a student would never know anybody's been through the drawers and the stuff.
Is that right?
Yeah. And if he found what we were looking for, well, we didn't make any issue. We just let it lie and just watched the situation until it straightened itself out. He did a lot of things, firecrackers, explosives. We never worry about alcoholic beverages, but they'd be missing items. He and Mr. Herlong, they got along pretty well. They respected each other. But Herlong couldn't get along with the other people. But Mr. Patterson, he'd give him any trouble. It was a Mexican standoff that way. He let him run the cleaning. Herlong took care of the maintenance. And Mrs. Toff was the old lady. She'd been the one of the housekeeping supervisors there. She got a great kick out of it, how they kind of stood each other off.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And she stood both of them off. She wouldn't take any guff from either of them. She ran the linen room and the check-in and check-out of storage. procedures.
No. Well, what did Phil? He just had to see that those darkies done the work.
Yeah, he usually it was hard work. I mean, it was up and down the four flights. He usually checked out about, see, there were 37 sections. And, if we started somebody new, he'd, you know, stay with them the whole morning. The morning was devoted to the cleaning of the rooms and the trash removal. And then afternoons were the full-time crew then went into waxing, polishing the floors. And,
yeah.
Doing things of this sort, cleaning screens and windows. So he would cover about he got through every room in every section about once every 2 weeks. A lot of work. Well, then later, after he had his first heart attack, he slacked off pretty much on that. But he knew when they were doing the work, when they weren't.
Yeah.
He would train the new ones. We set up two sections where they would start the new ones, and these were handy where they were easy to supervise. And then once they got trained, we always had a turnover.
Well, you didn't have any connection over there.
Yeah, I did then.
Oh, that's the reason that you knew him.
Yeah,
so
that was before we started my...
off-campus housing.
This was
you were on-campus housing.
Yeah, this was from... when
Harold was in the service.
Yeah. And so that was a long time. It was, until 1953, and then... when we moved over to the old house where your office is now, old frame house there, well, Mr. Patterson was also in charge of that.
Yeah.
Supervised the cleaning. So he'd come over about once a week, see how things were going.
Well, now, was he always long and tall and gigantic looking?
Yeah.
Always.
Always looked like he never had enough to eat in his life.
Yeah.
Oh, he used to tell me a lot of wild and woolly tales about when he was in the lumber business and the logging business.
Oh, don't you know he had them? Well, he had lived one life by the time he got over there, you see. He's 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Well, didn't he live in Georgia till then? How long had he been out here? Before we knew him, Carl.
I don't know.
He bought this tract of Cypress over here from the Pfeiffers. Or maybe it was from who runs the mill? Franklin.
Franklin.
Anyhow, it was that big tract of Cypress out there. He had a mill out there in the early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't stay. They came back, though, later.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what he did, actually, during World War II. Never did. We'd talk about various things, and I knew he'd been a veteran. He was a veteran of World War I. And... but we were always so busy on immediate things that they never had too much time to talk about past things.
Yeah.
We used to talk some about something that happened up in Georgia. I wish I could remember. Who's living in his house, say?
I don't think anyone is.
Well, he sold a big house, you know.
No, I didn't know.
Yeah.
Yes, and some nice people live there. And the other one, I guess, is to be sold. The little house down there that he bought or built and bought or something.
You mean he sold it before he died?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, where was he living
then? In that little house right next to it.
That was the one he built. That's where Stanley lived, I think. Stanley lived there.
Yeah. Well, now, Carl, how did Stanley get connected over there?
Well, he's some relative of Miss Patterson's. I think he's brother-in-law or something.
His wife's married sister.
Yeah, well, he got started right after the war, electrical maintenance.
Yeah. He come before Mr. Patterson?
No, he came after. I think Mr. Patterson got him the job over there, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
But we were looking for an electrician, and then we found we couldn't hire one, but then electrical maintenance needed one, and so Stanley got in on that deal. And then, let's see, we got a Mr. Spear. I think Mr. Patterson recruited him for the heating plant, and then he used to help keep us supplied with night supervisors. We had.
Oh, yes. He would know the whole countryside,
yeah,
wouldn't
he? So we had a couple of long, lean characters from down this way who worked at night. And I forget that one old man's name. He wasn't too sold on it. Yeah, but he usually gets more problems. But, you know, after all, we had to have him.
Well, how did Mr. Stanley, Paul Stanley?
Yeah.
How did he fit in? He's an electrician?
Yeah, he's an electrician. He got a job with electrical maintenance. We used to have our own electrical man, and then it turned out to be a little better. Mr. Herlong could take care of, minor electrical repairs and teach student workers how to change switches and replace light fixtures and this sort of stuff. But general electrical maintenance needed people that were more skilled on a full-time basis.
Yeah. Well, I had seen Stanley. He also took care of the labor over there?
No, he was just straight out and out electrician.
He didn't have anything to do with running it?
No. He was just I don't know what they would call him, probably an electrician one now or something like that, the way they got it classified.
Well, who would he work under?
Well, he would work under he was in plant and grounds division.
Yeah.
It was then called general maintenance, now called plant and grounds. And they have an electrical maintenance and a whole raft of things, plumbing department, heating.
Painting department.
Painting. Well, who would be his boss?
Well, Cal Green is the campus engineer and head of plant and grounds, and then they got foremen on their heads of these sub departments.
Well, who would be foreman of the electrical?
I really don't know anymore. Not having any dealings with them.
Can't keep up.
Mm-mm.
So much of it. Well, seemed like what Herlong, has he been there a long time?
Yeah, see, he came with us before the war.
He's the one that got Mr. Patterson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought it was the other way around.
No.
Uh-uh.
He came to us. There was a man by the name of Wingate who worked in the business office, who lives in McIntyre, who lived in McIntyre. I don't know whatever happened to Homer. And when the housing set up opened with the Fletcher and Murphy Halls at in 39, we had a man by the name of Earl Brunson, who was the way we had it set up, we had two men, a Mr. Mallard and a Mr. May. Brunson was head of housing maintenance. And then we had Mr. Mallard and Mr. May, and then we had three women. One of them took care of Thomas, one of them took care of Sled, and one of them took care of Buckman, Ma Peeler, and Mrs. Toth, and a Mrs. Johnson. And Brunson got very dissatisfied with his job, and he decided he would quit. And so we were looking around for someone, and Herlong had just got out of the Navy. He'd been in the Navy for 6 years.
Mm.
And so he came on to work for us then, and he stayed until it was about 1942 or 43, and then he was very well apt to be called back into service, so he volunteered for the Seabees and got him. He had been a Navy chief before he was out of service, and I think he got a commission. I don't know what it was. Whether he got an actual commission or went back in as a chief in the Seabees. And he stayed in until, and he came back in 1946. And
but that's when he went into the bar business, didn't he?
No. Then he got Mr. Patterson to work for us, because we changed the whole setup. See, the two of the housekeepers had retired, and Mrs. Toff was getting too old to push these crews. So I opened the linen room setup and put her in charge of that. And then we decided to just have a labor supervisor for the whole thing. And so that was when Mr. Herlong got Mr. Patterson. And then Herlong got kind of dissatisfied with things again and quit and went to Miami and went in the bar business.
The bar?
Yeah.
Yeah, he owned a bar. And then he came up here and worked for in a bar.
On Northwest 13th Street, where Trader Tom's is now, I think.
You know, come think about it, he reminds me of Beatty Rogers.
Yeah.
And Beatty's younger days.
And
please, do you have Mike?
Oh, no.
He could take care of himself.
Mike.
I guess that's what he makes me think of. Beatty used to be a policeman.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Navy, old Navy chief.
But
you know,
thing
he
so long didn't drink. But, you know, his wife, while he was away in the service, she was drinking like mad, and she became an alcoholic. And Mr. Patterson used to go out and try to get her straightened out all the time when Mr. Herlong was away. He used to go out and try to get her sobered up and talk to her. And he was very fond of her. I know he used to.
What's her name?
Dorothy. Yeah. Well, anyhow, Mr. Herlong left for that, and Mr. Bracken came in to take his place, but Mr. Patterson stayed on. And Mr. Bracken and Mr. Patterson, that was a kind of a Mexican standoff, too. But Bracken was very arbitrary. I mean, you know, bossy man. I got along well with him, but he was hot-tempered.
And Mr. Patterson off for a long time.
No, they didn't get along. I mean, there wasn't any old buddy-buddy business.
Amongst any of them.
Like a bunch of pairs of tomcats walking down the same alley, see. One of them take care of his side of the street, and the other one take care of the other side.
Well, let me tell you, I don't know Mr. Bracken. I know Mr. Herlong slightly.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, I'd want to say Mr. when I call him Mr. Herlong.
He's very formal about everything. I mean, he always calls me Mr. Opp, and I always call him Mr. Herlong. And he's one of the trouble is he's a very shy man. He just doesn't make friends easily, and it's hard to get him to open up. And yet he's got a tremendous fund of information, and he's been every place and done practically anything you can mention.
Well, how did he get in? How did he get in the Navy?
Well, he went into the Navy back in the peacetime days.
And he made something of it.
Yeah, he was a chief, he came out of the Navy. He was a journeyman, electrician, plumber, and carpenter.
I'm gonna write a book on all this.
You ought to see that guy work with tools. I mean, it's beautiful to watch him work with tools.
Yeah.
He just like, I mean, screwdriver, pliers, wrench, saw, hammer, precise, accurate, neat.
Yeah.
And
not a wasted motion.
Yeah.
And he real shit mouth.
Real shit mouth.
I mean, he doesn't volunteer things. I mean, if you ask him a question, he'll answer it.
But if he gets started talking.
But it takes, he's very, very cautious. I mean, he's not not garrulous like me or voluble or anything else.
Yeah, well, he's not academic.
Well, no, he's not stupid by any stretch.
I didn't say stupid. I said academic.
Now, the funniest thing happened while Jackie was gone.
I'm glad you said that.
I was calling Mr. Alone. I want advice, you know, about something around the house. And our garbage grinder quit working. And, of course, naturally, the warranty's run out on it.
And,
so I got the book out, and he did everything that it said to do, see, and it just sat there.
Yeah.
And I looked up the local service people and called them, and they said, well, we don't have anyone to send out, but if you'll have the thing disconnected and bring it in, we'll fix it. Well, hell, it's tied into the dishwasher, see, and you got all this electrical stuff and hoses. And, I mean, the dishwasher hose goes through the...
And nice of them, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't about to attempt it. So I worked it a couple more times, tried to do the system, and still didn't work. So finally, I called Mr. Herlong one Friday and told him what the problem was. I said, I've got to get the thing taken off, taken down to the place, so you get it fixed.
Yeah.
So he said, well, Mr. Metton, I'll come out Monday at noon if you'll be there. So I came home Monday at noon. They came right just a few minutes after 12. Mr. Herlong's no little man, and Mr. Benton is about 6 inches taller than Mr. Herlong, and about, I mean, he's a big man. So
oh,
here they came with a bucket and a whole sack of tools, see. So Mr. Herlong said, where's your book on the thing? So I gave him the book. He said, Mr. Benton, get down there and let's run it through the system again, see. So there's a reset button, see. And so Mr. Benton, in the meantime, put his hand down in, and I'd already discovered the grinder part turned freely, see. And so Mr. Benton gets down on the floor. I mean, you couldn't even see under the sink. He filled the whole hole, see. His hand back under there. Mr. Herlong said, now push it till it clicks. So he pushed it till it clicks, see. And Mr. Herlong turned on the water and flipped the switch. The thing ran beautifully. Mr. Herlong turned and looked at me. And I said, Mr. Herlong, I read that book, and I've had my fanny down on the floor just like Mr. Benton, and I pushed that thing till it clicked, and it didn't work. And Mr. Herlong said, well, I guess we just scared it. And so they stayed there, and they ran it, they stopped and started about 3 inches. Worked perfectly. And I said, I guess it's just like a mule. You have to hit him in the head to get his attention. Two big guys and a bucket full of tools that decided they'd better cooperate and get taken apart.
I can think of tricks like that. I've played just dozens of them. And I won't name any of them, though. Well, I'm glad to know that about Herlong. Let me tell you, this rug I got from him. I was over there one day. I said, "That's Miss Patterson Clint."
Well, you know where that rug came from? You know how old that rug is?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's old.
It was bought in 1940 for a Fletcher and Murphy lounges, and
oh.
It came from Tomlinson of High Point.
And he recognized it. It was in his office, I imagine.
We had it in the offices and
in the
Fletcher
lounges.
And Murphy lounge.
And then
they
took them out and gave
rugs.
Gave them to anybody that wanted them.
Never had a pad under it.
It's the only thing I ever got from the university. Mm. And fell over there, and I needed something in here to cushion it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bad echo. Mm-hmm. As it turned out, I didn't need it. This is all I needed right here. Anyhow, I went over there, and he said no, that it had to go through channels and all sorts of things, you know. And I was about to go, and he said, well, I'll tell you, I've got a couple of these old wore-out things over here. If you could possibly use them, be glad we'd just get rid of them. And he knew all along that's what I wanted. They were wore-out, though. I don't know. They wouldn't have any use for them up there, would they?
No.
And let me tell you, I went down to his house one night. We went down there.
To Herlong's?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah.
And there's not many houses like that. Why, he's got an electric fixture. Just anywhere you'd want a little ray of light, he's got it. Inside and out.
We went over there after Mr. Patterson's film. We went with the Herlongs.
Well, see, he had built another house that Phil
built that old house over there with boards and different sizes. It's nothing. It's just an old country house compared to Herlong.
But Herlong built another one out here that looked out over Payne's Prairie. This was here the first time before we left, and it was a very well done house.
Yeah.
But as I say, he's a master craftsman. And now he knows air conditioning, and he learned that. He's also an expert marksman in the Navy. According to somebody who knew his Navy history, he was one of the top. See, he was in the China service, Asiatic fleet. And he spent his whole time in the Navy in the Far East.
I would have thought he'd never been out of place.
No.
But they said that he was one of the top marksmen
on
the
bar and then worked for
the whole
one,
fleet
you know.
There.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was so strange that he worked in the bar because his wife being an alcoholic, you would think he'd want to stay as far away from that as possible.
I wonder how he got that yen.
No, I was in Miami, and of course they've always had property. See, his father, he was telling me when we were at the house about how he had had a hard time making the decision to build the house where it was on this other property over near I-75, which apparently is quite a hunk of acreage.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, Mr. Herlong, what are you doing on that? On the problem. He said, well, nothing. And I said, well, gee, the taxes on that much acreage must be pretty high. And he said, well, I'm doing a little bit with it. And he told me how many board feet of lumber that cut off the damn thing. And it was probably more than my total salary for the year. So I quit feeling sorry for him. He wasn't laying poor.
Well, now, did they pay him down there?
At the university?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What would be his salary?
It's about $6,000 or something.
Oh, that's not. He wouldn't work for that.
Well, I don't know. I know when he started, when he came back, I got him back on the job over there. He came to see me.
He's working to get his retirement.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he's
and I think the job at that time was about $5,500. It may be up to $7,000 now, but about a year ago, he and one of the other labor supervisors came to see me. They were really ticked off because, see, he has trained he's trained half of the mechanics they have on the campus, the plumbers and electricians. Started in the old residence hall area, and he taught them business.
Yeah.
And they just had some salary adjustments, and the plumbers had gotten, some terrific increase in salary. Because they had to do it to keep them. And these plumbers, and I've trained every one of them they got here, are making more money than I am now. And I'm running the whole business and still teaching them how to do plumbing. And
how about that?
So they were putting me for a change of classification. And so I said, well, you sit down and write it out, the arguments, and get the information, and we'll come back over and I'll go over with you and see. I can help anybody except myself. And he came back. He'd written out their statement and request, and I helped him correct it a little bit. And he and two others, they were going to quit. And then I urged him to get in touch with vocational people and see if he could get vocational teaching there.
Yeah.
And anyhow, I found out later that they got them all adjusted.
Mm-hmm.
And, Nate had to change it.
Well, now look, Carl, Mr. Patterson was gifted too.
Yeah, I know.
Now, he wasn't, you know, a master mechanic like Herlong. What is that Herlong who lived out at Micanopy?
Yeah.
That's it, Danny?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. AZ, I believe his name was.
He does.
Like
yeah.
Yeah. That big, that great big columned house.
That's where he brought
mm-hmm.
out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's where he gets some of his, well, that's curious, isn't it? It's curious. Now, he's still a workman.
Mm-hmm. But he's also a capitalist when you get right down to it.
Yeah.
I mean, land, they always had land, cattle.
Yeah. But old man Herlong, you see, didn't do anything except manipulate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess VJ never cared about manipulating particularly.
No, he didn't have a brother?
I don't know. I think there's some other.
Oh, if that was a house that big, he would have had a large family.
Sisters.
I think
sisters.
It was sisters, yeah, but it was.
Yeah.
So, that's the way it goes.
Doug, he had the Florida bank bought out, FIFA Bank.
Yeah.
And,
I think I had a little
cool money. Yeah. I had to talk loud so he could hear that all the mouth.
Tell us they are hurting. Yeah. Boy, they were had their head this way down this way, trying to keep them from seeing them laugh, you know. And I signed
the
thing and threw the check down there and walked out.
Well,
maybe it
wasn't
that
a duck out on you, like she wanted to change the oil.
No.
Now, you've heard him talk like that by the yard.
Yeah.
He used to come and just talk and tell us all these stories. I wish I could remember them.
Well, that's a great benefit of these recorders now. He used to come over and when we were over the old house building there, he'd walk in, you know, sit down, light a cigarette. He didn't give a damn if I was busy or not. They were stacked in his house. And he just thought, oh, well, I can go to hell. I'm honored by the visit. If I ever need him for something, I can get some action. And so he'd sit there and talk for 30 minutes about this, that, and the other, what was going on.
He you was, just take these last year, did you?
Yeah.
You sure didn't sound so sick.
Oh, no, he didn't sound sick up to the very end. You know what?
What did you
I forget where it was.
He just was in there, lit a cigarette, sitting there, and
yeah,
was busy
yeah.
with everything, and he just right
we back. Just talk away and tell me what was going on, who was doing what to whom over on the other side of the fence. But if we ever needed anything, well, we'd call him, and he'd be over there right away and get it done promptly.
But now, he knew how to handle the niggers.
Yeah, he was very he was very fair with them and stern with them.
Yeah,
he was,
but he just knew how to do it.
Well, he knew how to handle the group we had to work with at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, they were.
Now, whether he would be able to handle them now is something else. I don't know.
Under the new working conditions, and of course they're getting more pay now, and we're getting a better educated. Group, but
I'm talking about that, yeah.
ones we got were country black people for the most part, and he was
yeah.
very fair with them, and he would sure, but it was the old paternalistic system. See,
sure.
I mean, it's my nigger, and nobody's gonna touch him if
uh-huh.
he's gonna. Well, it was the same thing that they used for years in relation to the courts. I mean, if you were black and you had a good white boss,
yeah.
You got tossed in jail. Well, you knew damn well he's going down there and get you out.
Yes.
But otherwise, you'd rot.
You know, that was one of the great satisfactions of that old system to be if you're a nigger to be a white folks nigger.
Yeah.
Now we got two out here right in front, Miss both of them women, Bessie and Daisy. And life means so much more to them than it does to these others that have come on after them, and they are sort of allergic to the white people, you know. White people, like anybody else, dead under their feet. But now Miss Bessie comes up here, and I'm telling you, she is queenly.
Mm-hmm.
And Miss Daisy comes up here, we go down there and sit on the porch with her, and she can report and tell you things that happened in 1945, you see. Just as clear in her mind, she can tell you what happened yesterday also. And now the thing that has held her together, she's worked for the one of the Richardson boys.
Oh, yeah. So is he still out here?
Leroy.
Joe?
No, I don't mean those boys.
Oh.
I mean his daddy, his the old generation. Now, she's worked for that same family since early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all the family that I've come across, the Richardson family, they almost as if they invented prudence. They just breathe it.
Yeah.
They just sleep it. I've heard them at Sunday school. You never get below or above or beyond or outside. It's all prudence. And it's a modest thing. Well, she's I wouldn't say it's limited of you, but it's given her something to hold on to that she can reach, you see. And it just makes you feel sorry for these other the little country, no count things. They come home and all she says they do is bounce that ball.
Yes,
and she's 79 years old now, and she's doing something all the time.
Mm-hmm.
She, let me tell you, she, if you could just see it now, they could tell you more about it. I don't have that feel, but she's the best dressed woman in this whole country. She every day she has on a fresh apron and a different one.
Apron.
Starched,
you know.
Starched. Washed in the kettle.
Washed in the kettle.
With bluing.
I ain't heard of bluing since they started putting out laundry detergent.
Well, now that's you see, that's the old school. Now, people like that used to work for Ms. Patterson. Ms. Patterson worked niggas too.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, they talked.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they got through, they'd set out on the back porch and talk. I can't imagine the nigger having much of a chance. Ms. Patterson won't do most of it.
Yeah.
But she might have had a little bit.
Like in South Carolina.
Yeah, Ms. Patterson was a great talker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When I first knew them, I was attracted by Miss Patterson. She raised vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, Lord, when I put in corn out here, I had 20 acres of corn and made silage of it. That's the first time I went broke. I followed her system. And it made beautiful corn. The only thing wrong with the corn, the fertilizer couldn't hold it quite long enough in the milk stage to get into this thing. But Mr. Gilbert came over here to see that corn. Mr. Patterson came over here. Fred Wood came over here. That was as pretty a piece of corn as ever raised in this country. I done it. Just like Ms. Patterson said to it. Yes, sir. I'd go down the store and I'd
buy.
But
you went broke.
Well, that was the fault of the corn.
You
see, I made silage of it, and the fertilizer wouldn't hold it quite long enough to keep the corn green, to keep the kernels milky,
uh-huh.
to put it into the pen here, into the ditch here. I'd go down there at Wynn's, and I'd want some soda, and Fred, Rob would say, what you gonna do with that? I say, I'm gonna put that on the corn. Well, he says, they used to put things like that on it, but I said, this is Ms. Patterson's remedy, and I'm using it.
this guy's going to come up here and he'd look at all you know, the papers and say to me, what in God's name does that boy want with his acreage? I can't stand farmland. And he can't either. He hasn't got time to do anything with it. Shake his head.
That's the truth. He said, Miss Patterson runs the farm. I just can't take it.
Yeah, that wasn't right, though.
No.
He knew about it. He knew the horses. Now, he picked out the horse over here, the one that's got the most sense. Faye's horse. The little spindle-legged horse, Missy. But she's got the most beautiful movements. And she'll come up to you and always come up and inquire about you, how you getting along. Never fail. And most people come out here, especially the horse people, can't stand her. Phil picked her out the first thing.
He knows a beautiful horse.
Phil knows a horse.
He loves a beautiful horse.
Yeah. Now, I don't think Herlong knows anything about livestock.
No, I don't. Now, he's got
cattle.
Mm-hmm. And
but he might.
You never can tell.
He's thought of a deep one.
He got pigs and he got chickens. And
oh, has he?
Yeah.
His wife knows more about those.
There's a darn menagerie out there.
And poodles.
Yeah, poodles.
That little daughter of his, isn't she darling?
She is. Darling.
She's a doll, yeah.
What's her name again? I keep forgetting.
She hasn't been here long. This is 1970, 60, 50. Is she 20?
Yeah, she's, I guess, a sophomore now at the university.
Yeah.
Well, how did she come so late? How long did it?
I don't know. She never had children.
Yeah.
Well, you know, those 30s were not, the population growth was not very much then.
Yeah, but it picked up in the 40s.
Yeah, it started picking up in the 40s. And went through the ceiling in the 50s and 60s.
Oh, she.
She wouldn't sing that with me then, Now that is true.
Well, did he have a reputation for that, Mabel?
No. I'll answer that. No. I was thinking if I could get Ward to run the thing. I did. He told me, he says, I'm going to make these notes for a year. He says, now, I know you can't pay for this in a year. But he says, when they do stuff, he says, then we'll fix it like you want.
Isn't that
marvelous? That is marvelous, and that he remembered all of that just so clearly.
Everything he told you.
Mm-hmm. How long was he and Miss Patterson married? Or was that his second wife or something?
They started out together, I think. I'm pretty sure.
I've heard him talk about how he took Mabel away.
Yeah.
She was 10 years younger than him, and her daddy thought she was too young.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a good time. Well, that was hat on, pushed on the side of his head.
Yeah, never take it off.
Never
took it off. Do we have a picture of him?
Yeah, there's some of our old. We had someplace got some.
I love to have a picture. Little snapshot of something.
He'd stand up, he'd come over here once my guy would go and get him and take him for a little ride. He couldn't walk around, take him for a little ride, bring him over here and let him see the cattle and the horses.
Is that his
hand?
That
looks
like him.
Yeah.
He always wore a good hat.
Yeah, I do. Mabel was going to give me his good hat, but I told her I couldn't wear it. And I just, what I wanted, I did. just loves how I like those old hats.
Yeah, one of the people who are. It's always sticking on the side of your back.
But I never was associated with him on the job, you see, up there where he was dealing with people. But to hear him talk about it, he, like you said now, he was a boss man. He had perfect ease up there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He'd go and talk to anybody.
Yeah.
He was always...
Students, you know, they could always come and talk to him. He'd sit down in their rooms and tell them some tales. And
yeah.
He was always really easy going. I mean, he never seemed to hurry, but he reminded me of a guy. My dad one time had two hired hands. That one at the same time. And one of them, I think his name was Fred Feltmeyer or something, and the other one was Gus Fortgreevy. Well, Fred was one of these guys that never seemed to hurry, see? And Gus was one of these guys that was always driving and pushing. Dad was always reminding me, said, "Oh, Fred, he gets up and he doesn't seem to hurry, but he gets the horses harnessed and he's in the field at the same time Gus is, and Gus just works his tail off." The herdier he gets, the behinder he is.
Before I found out that Mabel really didn't have much to say. And Phil was the one. But it took me a long time. I was so slow. Well, she had right to say too, but nothing like Phil. Now, he was in his family. In my view, Phil had a sort of a genius. He could tell just like that how you were feeling. And surrounded by commonplace people. And he got along with all of them. Now that's the thing, you see.
Well, he wouldn't take any guff.
Even to get along with his... And she wasn't a Jehovah's Witness all her life, was she?
She was from way back.
Oh, was she?
Yeah, way back in the early 30s.
And he never did go along, never went along with it, from what I gather.
He didn't go against it.
He just ignored it, probably. Figured that this too would pass.
But it didn't.
Oh, dear.
He's proud of Mabel's running, she thought. The thing of it was, she didn't know what he thought. And his mind worked that much faster. That, you know, he felt no compulsion to tell people how his mind worked.
Now, I remember we had this, when Jackie and I first got our house in Gulfview, we had to get, Jackie's folks had a stove, a spare stove, and then they had our refrigerator. And so we had to get both of them over. And that stove was one of these old-fashioned electrics with the solid burners on it, not these rings that they have on them now. And anyhow, it gradually got so it didn't work, and you couldn't depend upon the oven at all. So we finally decided made some changes in the kitchen. We got a new little General Electric stove, and So I asked Mr. Patterson about getting rid of the stove, and he said, well, I'll buy it. I'll give you $10 for it. He did. And so I asked him, well, you know, Mr. Oppen, it was real simple to fix that oven. He said, you know, it's just a system of pulleys in there. He said, I just took the back end off the stove and got new pulleys and got adjusted, and Mr. Stanley helped me with it. He said, that's a real fine stove. He said, it's got better insulation. It'll be running when that one you bought is worn out. And he put it in that little house he built. That's what he got it for.
Oh, really?
I expect the darn thing may still be up there.
I'll bet it is.
Because, see, those stoves, they made, those original electric stoves, were porcelain finish.
Yeah.
And they had, you could put your hand on the thing, and, you know, when the oven was on and on the outside surface, and it wouldn't be hot.
Yeah.
It'd be barely warm.
Yeah.
And I forget about that. What a bargain he got. He didn't even have to pay for getting the seat. Well, that was a real simple thing to fix. Just took the back off and got them pulleys working right.
We made some gates over here one time, and I had a design, and he had a design. And I had a diagonal to hold it up, you see.
Yeah.
And he made it just strong.
Mm-hmm.
I put bolts in it because this old lumber knife, you see, wouldn't hold up without just nails. And the one I put up was right there where we were standing, where the children ride it.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew it had to have a diagonal on it. He didn't care for my model. And his, if it had been made out of good stuff, would have lasted. But there's one thing against his. I had a bull that just had to scratch his hiney. And he weighed a ton when I got him, and in pasture stage, he still weighed 1,500 pounds. And that gate just got looser and looser. Until finally, it just gave way in the middle.
Well, you see these people, like, the farmers, like when my dad was a farmer, you know, you had to be a jack of all trades. You had to know how to fix machinery, and you had to be a carpenter, and you know, had to know how to set fence posts and square them up, and you had to know how to dig wells. And, you just couldn't call somebody to come and fix your binder or your tractor, and you had to know how to doctor your horses. And you had to know how to mix. You didn't buy mixed food then. You grew your own, you know, your corn, your oats, and your wheat, and you mixed your own proportions. Quite a deal.
Yeah. I tell you what, another thing I did, I just remembered. He went from here up to the Okefenokee and cut a lot of timber up there. And Channel 5 had that little program on the Okefenokee Swamp, 2 half-hour periods with a banjo and one of these old guys talking. And it's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get them to listen to Channel 5, you see. Some people, just the idea of Channel 5 is repugnant.
Mm-hmm.
And Mabel listened to the afternoon programs. And I taped it. I keep this little thing here, the tape program.
Mm-hmm.
And I use both channels, you see. I actually need 3 channels, but I don't have the 2. I mean, that's part of my business. And I took it over there and played it for him. And it's the only thing I ever heard him just listen to. And the next time I went over there, he told me more about the Okefenokee Swamp than was on those little tapes. And I taped it. And I put that with the Channel 5 tape.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But I don't tell anyone those things.
Mm-hmm.
It's none of their business. And once you tell it, the word gets out, and it's people have curious notions about tape.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never played this for anybody. I never play any tape for anybody. If I taped television, I still wouldn't play it for anybody. I used to go to the